You can make a tape, yes? Good afternoon. Thank you, Roger. And this is Sunday at Noon. I'm your host, Susan McInnes. Today, how fat's your garbage sack? If it's shrunk lately, and if you've begun creating separate piles for bottles and cans, cardboard, and computer paper, you're not alone. Folks all around the borough are driving their truckloads to Sandy's or to K&K or to the dump, making use of the Quick Stop Recycle kiosks set up around Fairbanks. So, where's all this stuff going? And do your friends and neighbors think this is a viable idea? And what about the city and the borough and the state governments and the feds? Are they supporting it? Is recycling going to be a permanent part of Fairbanks' future? And do you have any ideas for making recycling painless, profitable, and practical in America's far northwest corner? Well, in a bit, we'll open the phone lines for a two-way conversation. My guests today are three. Dick Jackson is with us. He is the Director of Health and Safety for the borough, has supported and encouraged recycling efforts in his tenure here. Marty Peel developed the proposal for the recycling pilot project through the Economic Development Center, where she works, and she'll report today on the first phase of that project. And Deborah Coons coordinates the project itself. It's called the Good Sense Working Group. Good afternoon. Welcome to Sunday at Noon.
Hi, Susan.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
Marty, I'm going to focus on you first so you can sum the project for us and give us a read on your the pilot project's first step results. What have you found and why? First of all, what do you want to do?
What we set out to do?
Yeah.
We set out to set up recycling stations, collection stations at four locations in the borough, a school, a fire hall, a shopping mall, and an office building, to see how well those sites would work for people, how well they'd be respected as recycling collection centers, and to demonstrate, to mobilize community support for recycling, to see if it was there, to coordinate it, to provide a structure for people to do that. We started out by having to raise some funds for the materials for the shelters, and so we sent out proposals to various businesses and organizations to raise about $4,000. The labor was donated, the workspace was donated, the coordinator time was donated. We succeeded in doing that. We raised about $12,000 from local businesses and organizations in cash and in-kind contributions of space and labor and transportation of shelters to their sites and so on. We also have built two additional shelters besides the four we set out to set up because of popular demand, basically. Deborah just got the shelters out to the College Mall at the intersection of University and College last weekend, and we sent one down to North Pole at Sourdough Fuels at the corner of Hurst and Badger Road because those businesses and people in those areas asked for them and funded them. The results that we've seen are that in the first month of operation, we had the Foodland and the Weller Elementary School shelters up. And the Foodland shelter alone generated 2.5 tons of recyclables, with the volumes doubling every week, so that in the last week we generated 1.5 tons, which to the credit of our dedicated, reliable, outstanding volunteers, was all transported by volunteers who worked on their own time with their own gas and their own vehicles. And we're there every day. They followed through. And days when we overflowed, it was only because there was so much material there that our volunteers couldn't take it in one load. In the second month, in the month of April, we recycled 3.5 tons with all four shelters set up. And again, Foodland, with 2,000 people going through that parking lot every day, generated 75% of that volume. But the others are kicking in, and we expect them to continue to increase their volumes accordingly, about doubling it every month. I don't have the totals from the month of May yet.
Mm-hmm. Is this a surprise? Did anybody expect that Fairbanks would sit back and ignore this, or did people think that Fairbanks would support recycling wholeheartedly? I open it up.
Well, I was surprised. I think the support that we got was overwhelming and astounding for us and extremely rewarding. It's been a really fun project to work on. I think that although we only generated 3 tons of recyclables last month, Sandy recycled 59 tons. And and in the year before, that's 1/3 of the total amount she recycled in 1989. So her volumes have gone up by like 6.
Wow.
And I don't know how much of that is because we got people thinking about recycling. I have to think that some of it is that we stimulated some people to think about it.
Dick Jackson, were you surprised? Seemed to me that you thought Fairbanks would be a slow sell on recycling.
I think Fairbanks, of course, and you have to realize that we're in a total volume, that it's a small amount at this time. And I think if we could look at the total amount, we're probably about 1% right now. And in next year's budget, we had proposed to bring that up to a 5% level with supporting groups like Good Sense and whatever else we might do in the community. It's a good start. And we need to go on from here, though. And as I've spoken to the Good Sense group before, the possibilities are unlimited for us here in Fairbanks. And I guess my thought is that why not Fairbanks lead the nation rather than the nation lead Fairbanks? And that's the viewpoint I like to take. The Good Sense group is unique. You look through the recycling magazines and the national press, and you don't see a lot of this type of thing going on in the United States. And I think that's where Fairbanks can lead. We can give them our experience and say, look, do you want to start a recycling program in your community? This is what worked here. A group like Good Sense somewhere, why don't we export our technology and our successes to other places? And I'm hoping, and of course optimistically, that this is where we're going here in Fairbanks, that we're seeing something here that we can export to other places, that we have a community that wasn't recycling, and all of a sudden we're seeing a jump start on recycling. I like that.
Good. Does anybody anticipate going from 55-gallon drum kiosks to dumpster kiosks?
Ultimately, I think we'd like to try and do that. But right now, because we are working strictly with all volunteers, we don't have the facilities or the manpower to be able to do that. But ultimately, it'd be great to be able to have huge dumpsters in order to just put your receptacles into. Mm-hmm. It'd be great.
You've had, in this project that Marty was just pointing out, donation of money, donation of time, donation of space. How about the volunteers from your perspective? Have they made this engine run?
They have definitely made the engine run. If we couldn't do it without them. And we're always looking for more, of course. It's phenomenal how people are just ringing up or stopping by and saying, hey, I want to help. It only takes an hour and a half once a month to do any sort of hauling. Or they could do painting. We run strictly on volunteer labor as well to build the shelters. And it's phenomenal. Organizations, companies, and private individuals have just come up to us. Of course, we're always looking for more, but definitely we couldn't even be doing this if it weren't for the volunteers.
Well, look at what's next. Next, I want to remind people that Marty Peel and Dick Jackson and Deborah Koons are here with us, the Economic Development Center, the Borough Department of Health and Safety, and the Good Sense Working Group represented. A little later, well, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes or so, if folks want to get involved in this conversation, you'll be able to call 474-5044. Marty, what's next? You've had a setback or two. Borough Assembly considered the idea of funding a driver, and with all that is attendant, insurance and gas and all the rest, and a vehicle, and then turned around and said, no, we don't think that's such a good idea. How much of a wrench did that throw in your year, and what's next for the project here?
Well, you're right. It felt like a setback, but we're trying not to look at it that way. For one thing, John Davies called us and said, what can we do to help you? You've obviously demonstrated their support in this community for this service. How can we help you provide this service? And so it was a gift to begin with, and to have it withdrawn was disappointing, but we were planning not to go that route anyway. We weren't counting on that. It would have been really nice. It would have been a wonderful confirmation and wonderful recognition for the volunteers who did so much to show interest. The pilot project was designed to run on the strength of volunteers to show interest, but I have never expected that volunteers would work forever at this. And we are looking for a way to pay a driver, to pay a coordinator, to pay for a vehicle and the gas, as you said. I will be writing proposals. I have one on my desk to Ben and Jerry's. We fit their guidelines specifically for innovative grassroots solutions to community problems and ideas that can be disseminated to other communities. Mm-hmm. And they have requested that we send them a proposal on the order of $6,000 to $8,000. But I'm thinking that to pay a driver $9 or $10 an hour is going to cost about $20,000 when we insure her or him. And to pay a coordinator a decent salary for the effort that it takes her to do her job well is going to be comparable. We can recover a lot of those revenues from the recyclables themselves. If each shelter generated as much volume as the Foodland ones generated in the last week of March alone, we could raise about $15,000 in a year. if we have 15 of them out there. They could raise 1,000 a year.
And this is just turning it over to...
Just based on what Sandy will pay us, right, as the general public bringing her recyclables at the current rates. So some money can come from that. We can be self-supporting to that extent. And if we get enough volume, it's conceivable that we would be efficient enough to do that. In the meantime, we need a shot to get going. The Fairbanks Rotary Club gave us the proceeds from the Chena River Run. We applied for that grant and got it in April, and the race was in mid-May. And although we don't have the exact figures, we're looking at in excess of $14,000 that the donors, the sponsors of that run, contributed, as well as every individual who ran and contributed a fee for their registration.
So that's the jump start you're talking
about,
right?
That's it. Yeah, that's it. It was incredibly encouraging. Yeah.
Well, the Borough Assembly had a difference of opinion, it seems.
Yes, they did.
Dick Jackson.
I guess, you know, I'm pretty close touch with the Borough Assembly, as you might imagine, and I'm perplexed at best. The Borough Assembly, about a month and a half to 2 months ago, passed an ordinance that indicated that we'd be recycling at the landfill to set up a recycling center there, and my department was in the process of issuing a request for proposals to the private sector to indicate who might come forward, if anybody, and to do this at the landfill, and we were in the process of doing that, and their most recent budget deliberations apparently changed course. I'm not really sure what they're doing now, because they took half of the landfill budget and placed it in the Borough Assembly's budget. And I'm told that was with the intent to privatize the entire landfill operation. And I think that's what they're doing. And I can't, for the life of me, understand why their policy would drift back and forth. And I know the mayor is quite perplexed by their actions, and I'm certainly perplexed.
When you say privatize, you're saying simply put it out to bid so that,
yes,
Joe and Jill Grabunja and their garbage company come in and say, for X dollars a year, we can do what you need,
right,
according to certain specs.
I assume if we do that, that part of that proposal, if in fact that's what the Borough Assembly wants to do, would encompass to some degree a recycling effort. The landfill is made up of many components, but one of them that we aren't doing now, and what the Assembly seems to indicate, is that they want to do recycling at the landfill. And there is opportunity to do that there. And I'm just not really sure what it is exactly they're going to do now, but I'll stand back and watch. I guess I thought we'd be well ahead of where we're at today at the landfill. And we are going to do some experimental work even next week with cardboard out there. But when you set a policy direction, you have to set that course of action or line the tiller up and get the ship going down the middle of the current. But you can't keep moving it back and forth, and that's what I see us doing now.
Between privatize, not privatize, do recycle, don't recycle.
That's correct. Yeah.
What's your opinion as the Director of Health and Safety? Do you think privatization is a good idea if the teller is established that way?
There is some real possibilities of privatization, certainly of recycling at the landfill. And I see all sorts of opportunity there for the private sector to come in. And however, as Marty and Deborah know, that this is not a free lunch. We have to pay the price even for recycling, because we're 4,000 miles from the marketplace. Mm-hmm. And we have lots of opportunity to recycle. However, I guess what I like to see is something in an overall viewpoint where we look at the markets out there. We maybe try to create our own markets. And Marty and I have talked extensively about that. Maybe some sort of manufacturing facility here in Fairbanks that takes these recycled goods and creates a product. So we're creating our own destiny. Mm-hmm. I think there is opportunity there. But however, if we're in the mode of privatizing the landfill and doing other things, maybe we lose that opportunity. And I think that's where government comes in. We should be public and private partnerships. Yes, we can privatize part of the landfill. We can possibly privatize the recycling side of that, and I would support that.
This is Sunday at Noon. You're listening to Dick Jackson, Deborah Coons, and Marty Peel. Marty, what's the line between private and publicly run services in your mind? Once again, the Borough Assembly decided, it seems anyway, on the basis that it was more properly in private hands than in public hands to do things like the Good Sense Working Group, that it would not fund, mm-hmm, the driver. Mm-hmm. And so what's the line for you? Should we one way or the other, or does it matter?
Well, I would love to see private businesses doing the recycling, but the reason that volunteers are doing it and breaking their backs to do it for the community is that it isn't economical for a small business to do it yet for some of these materials. And we are trying to fill that niche. I think there was some misunderstanding about what is and is not profitable about what we're doing. In the first month when we recycled 2.5 tons, we generated $93 in revenue from the recyclables. And, you know, I would encourage any person who wants to have a truck and maintain a truck and put in the time full time to collect at the shelters to go for it. But in the meantime, I'm going to try to keep the volunteers motivated and try to make it rewarding for them. Sandy does make money, and also Bernie Carl and Obi on College Road make money on aluminum. In fact, aluminum generated about 85% of our revenues in that month, and that's the same for the other recyclers who are selling it out of town. They make some money. Sandy makes some money on the white paper that she recycles, but she loses money on plastic, glass, and cardboard at this rate. And we are just trying to make it economical to get those things out of town. They're valuable materials. They can be used somewhere. It's not economical to move them from the landfill or to collect them separately for a small business to do that. We're filling that niche until the markets can bear the cost of collecting those materials and paying somebody to do that. And I think that's where the confusion lies.
Deborah, you were talking the other day about Sandy trying to make her operation more efficient over a 2-week hiatus. Can you fill people in on that? I understand the recycling center, or not your center, but Sandy, your commercial arm, in essence, is closed and going to reopen fairly soon with some changes.
Yeah, she's going to be open, well, from what we've heard, the 18th. Of June, and which will be for a total of 2 weeks. Basically, she's trying to get a flowchart action going, so that you go in one end, you put your recyclables there, and then it just goes on through and flows through the plant there over to the other end and goes into the semi trucks and on its merry way.
So more efficient. And now I've heard two different things. One is that recycling is not economically viable. Dick, as you pointed out, transportation costs are high. Other people have said the rest of the nation is not retooling to use recycling goods, and so the manufacturing centers can't use them. I've also heard, on the other hand, during the Earth Day, Earth Week celebrations, there is a memory of a report on APRN, Alaska Public Broadcasting Network, that the Anchorage Recycling Center and business was doing very well. I mean, in the black. So is it not profitable?
I think I can answer that. If you take out the component of transportation, it's very definitely
it's
a profit.
It's not going anywhere.
But the problem is that this 4,000 miles that I talked about from the marketplace, because recycling takes place when somebody buys that product and puts it back into the resource stream. And that transportation component of Alaska's problem is the one that's really facing us. Yes, it's profitable if you can take out that component.
And one of the wonderful things about Good Sense was that Cars Foodland, Mammoth Trucking, and the Alaska Railroad got together to donate free backhaul to us as a nonprofit group. They didn't feel they could support a single business in town, but they could support the volunteer initiative. And so we have, because of their generosity and their willingness to work with, you know, public-private sector type of cooperation, we have free backhaul of 2 vanloads per week, which is valued at $1,200. And that helps make the materials that we're collecting valuable to handle.
So $2,400 a week is being saved by...
$1,200.
Oh, I thought you said two.
Each van is six.
Got it. $1,200 a week is being saved by these donations.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Dick Jackson again.
One of the things that we're going to have to deal with, perhaps, and our vision is in the very near future, is that EPA is going to mandate recycling at landfills.
Not at 1%.
No. No. We expect that to be, on the first shot, to be 25%. That has tremendous implications in this community of we're going to have to get on the bandwagon. It's not a question of if, it's when. And I don't know when those regulations will take effect and what, if any, relief we might get from them. But right now, I think we should expect the worst and plan to take care of our problem here.
If we're recycling 25%, what does that mean to you? What do you envision happening at the landfill, public or private? Give us a picture of it.
Well, first off, the largest component of the material going to the landfill is paper products. And we will have to probably either do something like Ralph Bartlett's proposing with a densifier and reuse those products that way, or right now I can't tell you what it might be, but it would probably have to be some sort of manufacturing facility. But it'd have to be something very innovative, nothing we see today.
Is paper 25% of our garbage? Could we do it on paper? We could. You're
nodding. Oh, yes, absolutely. Garbage, and the component of paper is about 60% here in Fairbanks.
Huh. And if that were to happen, am I still putting things out in the plastic garbage bags, everything lumped together at once, or are we separating our paper from our
We'd like you to separate, because it'll be more cost-effective for us to develop the system that takes care of your problem.
And at the dumpsters outside of the core area, people would toss paper in one dumpster and the rest into others?
We would have to be very innovative there, too. I suspect the dumpster system, as we know it today, would go away. We'd probably have what I would consider to be intermediate transfer stations, which would have recycling facilities as part of the transfer station.
If you'd like to get in on this conversation, the number to call is 474-5044. You'll talk first to Glenn, then Glenn will pass you to us. Call 474-5044. Where do I want to go with this now? Is there also a future in this town to recycle by not consuming, which is to say, or recycle by choosing what you consume?
Yeah. One small example is that the Super Value stores, Foodland, and Fred Meyer's have all agreed to, well, sorry, Super Value and Foodland are selling canvas bags. In Super Value's case, they have the Good Sense logo on them, and the revenues from the sale of those canvas bags are going to Good Sense to support the construction of recycling shelters at their outlets. So you as a consumer can make a decision to go that route and support the project in more ways than one. You're not using plastic, you're not using paper, and you're supporting the recycling effort on the whole.
Also another thing about that is you could reuse your glass jars. You can reuse a lot of things that you buy anyway. And instead of just the word recycle doesn't necessarily mean that you put it into a receptacle to be turned into something else. You can create that yourself and use it in many different ways.
Yeah. Marty, again?
The brochures that we have at each of our recycle stations on the bulletin board for you to take home and put on your refrigerator each have a listing of ways you can reuse some of the materials that you can finally deposit at those shelters.
Okay. I've opened up a phone line. Is someone with us? Hello, can you talk to me?
Yeah, I sure can.
Hi, everybody can hear you. Why don't you go ahead? You're on Sunday at noon.
Great. About 15 years ago, the borough had the opportunity of buying a shredder for about $3 million. This would have given the landfill about another 5 years. What is going to be the cost right now of moving the landfill in conjunction with how much would we save in the sense of buying time by recycling now with our current landfill and with EPA's law on recycling? What's the potential lifespan of another landfill, and what's going to be the cost?
Thanks for your question. Dick Jackson.
Well, I think in answer to the listener's question that everybody knows and probably seen the press, it's going to be a tremendously expensive project to recite the landfill. We expect it to be the largest public works project that this borough has ever undertaken. And right now, we're conservatively estimating those numbers at about $30 million. That's to construct and not to operate, obviously, so the operational cost comes on top of that. The present landfill life is probably sometime in the 1990s. There's many things that bear on that, what and if we're going to do there presently that we're not doing that may be required by the regulators, which may contribute to the life of the present landfill. But I would expect sometime in the 1990s we have to relocate a landfill. And given the lack of recycling now and the possibility of doing it in the future, we calculate that as what we call landfill avoidance cost. And that's a sort of a zip phrase perhaps, but the fact of the matter is that we might even make the $30 million go away. That's the ultimate. We might get good enough in this community to not have the $30 million price tag, and that's the ultimate.
And is that because you think we can keep our current site and begin to recycle off of it?
Recycle
so
everything.
You have more room?
We could, ultimately. I mean, the technology is fast developing. Everything that goes in the landfill is actually a resource. It's not garbage. We keep using the word garbage. The word as it's a resource. And if we really wanted to come to the line, we could say, we're not going to have a new landfill. We're going to recycle everything that we put into the existing one. The only exception to that might be some construction debris, such as concrete. Hard to recycle concrete. Okay. Things like this. But they're rather benign compared to some of the other things we're putting in a landfill.
Which we can recycle.
So, yeah, we can do it.
We've got another caller on the line. If you'd like to get in on this conversation, it's 474-5044. We're talking today with Deborah Coons from the Good Sense Working Group, Marty Peel from the Economic Development Center, and Dick Jackson from the Department of Health and Safety for the borough. Hi, you're on the air. Have you stayed with us?
Yes, I'm still here.
Thank you. Go right ahead, please.
Well, I don't have so much of a question as a comment. It seems like people are ignoring the whole idea here of there should the landfill shouldn't even be haven't taken much of anything because everything is recyclable, and by simple incineration in using it for the power for power plants and stuff like that, everything, just about everything that can be made to burn would be disposed of. And the ash, there's no problem in scrubbing. The Thomas Index has pages and pages of every type of scrubber imaginable. I mean, they can, grinders and burners, everything imaginable. So the stuff that's not separated out, like metal and glass and stuff like that, and even some of that stuff that would pass through would be no big problem, and if they missed it, could be run through the incinerator and run through a boiler to make energy or heat or whatever.
Thanks, sir. Dick, what do you think about that? Should we incinerate most?
We can, and there are communities that are doing incineration, but I think that, as the listener probably knows, that we're, in looking at a very broad perspective, we're 6% of the world's population. We consume about 30% of the world's resources, and we can't get away with that forever. There are third world countries now that are competing with us that actually have more money than we do. And the price of the resources that we would burn, we can't afford to do that. And I'm looking now at in a broad perspective, and you know, talking about the entire United States, perhaps. But and we're a small part of that here. We have to recycle. The next generation is going to pay for our excesses, unfortunately.
That's all right. Marty Peel.
The Inter-Alaska Economic Development Council sent me down to the Frontier Thinking Conference in March on the anniversary of the oil spill. It was a gathering of business people and environmentalists to talk about economic development and environmental protection. And there were speakers from all over the world, third world countries, developing countries, and a few from the United States. And their message was very clear, that the third world countries are asking in resources for the volume and the materials that we waste every day. They're not asking for more than that. They're not asking to give up our lifestyles. They're asking us to give up our waste.
Mm-hmm.
They're pointing out that as the years go on, those people are going to become more and more angry that we are not saving or sharing the resources for them. The man from the Philippines was angry at the man from Japan for coming and clear-cutting his forests. And what they were saying was, please make a good faith effort to not waste, and we will make a good faith effort to try to not demand too much as we bring our lifestyles up in countries where we're really impoverished. I think it's a message we send to the rest of the world that we care.
You're on the phone with Sunday at Noon. Do you have questions about the Good Sense Working Group, about the politics of recycling, or the economics of recycling?
A little of both. First, I'd just like to applaud these folks for all they're doing. I have a comment about the consumer's responsibility. I was driving in. I'm at a payphone right now. I was driving in and heard a little discussion about the non-profitability of doing this in the private sector. And I think part of that lies with the consumer if we encourage people who are doing some kind of recycling. I'm a label reader anyway, but I just found another brand of toilet tissue the other day that was in a completely recycled packaging, plastic packaging, and the tissue itself was completely recycled. And it was for the same price as any other brand, which is a new thing because usually you pay so much more for those. But if the consumer would start to read labels, I know they have biodegradable plastic bags now as opposed to just degradable. And I think it's part of our responsibility to spot those things and encourage those businesses to do this.
Wonderful, and thanks for your comments.
Thank you.
When I was at, where was I? I was at a hairdresser's recently, and she said she had ordered all these plastic bags that she thought were biodegradable, only discovered that they were going to break up into little tiny plastic chunks and never go away, just get smaller. How much sales savvy are people going to have here? Dick Jackson.
Well, biodegradability is one thing we're studying at the landfill right now, and in Fairbanks here, we don't think there's very much of it. We're doing a thermodegradation study in the landfill. In other words, we're boring holes down there into that landfill, which you've had for about 30 years, and saying, what's going on inside of this thing?
And is it about heat, thermal degradation?
Oh. Heat.
Just like compost?
Yes.
Breaks it
methane,
down.
Those things that are products of this process. So we're looking for them, and I'm afraid we're not going to find them. So the lady's right. Even though it may say biodegradable, it probably won't be in our landfill, unfortunately, because of the cold temperatures and this latitude. So once we got it, we got it.
Okay, which is another thought for, as she was saying, people who consume. If once you got it, you got it, you better be careful what you get in the first place.
Yes.
Yeah. You're listening to Sunday at Noon. We have a caller on the line, and if you'd like to get involved in this conversation, the number to call, once again, is 474-5044. Hi, are you there?
Hi.
Thanks for being patient.
Okay. I'd like to thank Mr. Jackson for talking about the cost to our children and our grandchildren. That's something that seems to be overlooked quite a bit. Something that somebody mentioned a little while ago was that you can get canvas bags for carrying groceries. I don't know if you know it or not, but there's a company right here in town that makes canvas bags that you can use for carrying groceries.
Want to advertise them?
Doesn't bother me. Apocalypse Design. They make grocery bags right here in Fairbanks.
Thank you.
And it's supposedly out of, what should I say, natural materials. I haven't seen one yet, but that's what I was told. And do any of your guests know if the recyclers or people involved in this here in Fairbanks have discovered that some of the people who make plastic containers are starting to put identification marks on them so that they can be more readily recycled? In other words, the different grades of plastics are starting to carry identification markers like the bottom of a ketchup bottle. Because Sandy was taking milky plastic, the cloudy clear, and she said that was the only thing she could take. But I've heard, in fact, I saw an article, but I can't re-find it, identifying different plastics so that the recyclers know what they're dealing with.
Pollock, Marty Peel is nodding here. Do you have a thought to add?
Yeah, I noticed last week that my yogurt containers have a symbol stamped on the bottom, and it has HPDE or something like that, which must be somebody's code for the type of plastic that it is. It's true that Sandy only takes the milky-colored plastic that resembles the plastic milk jugs and vinegar containers and this one-pint orange juice container that Susan has here. But I know that the liter Coke bottles and 7-Up bottles are recyclable in some places. Here it's not economical for her to handle that. But it's a step in the right direction, and I think there's legislation coming down the line to require that kind of labeling for plastics.
Oh, I thought I was on four. Sorry for the silence. We had a disagreement over which button I should push now. A reminder, please, that we're listening to Deborah Coons from the Good Sense Working Group. Marty Peel from the Economic Development Center and Dick Jackson from the Department of Health and Safety. People are watching. My wheels were here. Marty, you have another thought before we go to our caller, please.
Just one thing to follow up on that one caller, and that is that Apocalypse Design, in fact, made the bags that SuperValue is selling. They made a conscious SuperValue made a conscious effort to buy local and support a local business in this sort of a thing, and it's filling these niches that's going to make recycling go, keeping business in town.
What is the Are people, are stores taking back paper bags?
Mm-hmm. They don't exactly take them back, but if you bring your paper or your plastic bag, they will discount you the amount it would cost them to provide you with a new one.
I bring my bag to Foodland, Safeway, wherever.
I think there's
health. Put my groceries in it and take them away.
That's right.
That's what
I know. There are health regulations preventing the passing one bag to another.
Okay. You're listening to Sunday at Noon, and caller, you're on the air. Thank you for waiting.
Thank you. Susan, can I ask two questions? Is that possible?
Yes.
Okay.
There are two per customer today. We're having a sale.
Okay, great. I tuned in at 20 after 12, so you may have already discussed this, but I'll ask the questions anyway.
Okay.
My first question is, we talk a lot about shipping recyclables out of state. What can be done here? What would it take, and what could be done in Alaska or Fairbanks or just somewhere where we can start turning these I'll call them raw materials, the actual glass, paper, aluminum. What can we do to turn those raw materials into either products or turn them into products that we can send out something in a new form that we can send out of here to the lower 48 or somewhere else to be remanufactured? Because it seems like until we close the recycling loop here in Alaska, it's just going to continue to cost us so much money to ship these items outside. And it really removes Alaska from the whole recycling process because we don't see the benefit of recycling up here in a lot of ways.
Okay, hold on to your second question. Sure. Your first question, an answer, please. A thought.
I think Marty and I have talked about this, and it's obviously an area that economic development can function in, and I guess I'm pretty optimistic that we can function in this area. You might have noticed a letter to the editor that I wrote one time that talked about this, and I was talking about making widgets out of whatever, but for instance, let me suggest that maybe we take the aluminum cans and make aluminum snow shovels. We have a propensity to use, we use snow shovels, right? So why not make our own snow shovels here? And then when we have some left over, we'll export them to Anchorage and maybe to, Point Barrow or someplace.
Valdez got a lot of snow.
Yeah, right, they're Valdez.
Sure. Yeah.
But the idea is that there is opportunity, and I think that it's coming. Our time is coming in this opportunities area, and I've a lot of faith in Marty's group over there at Economic Development to find that opportunity for us.
Once again, for people who don't know much about the Economic Development Center, if you have an idea for a profit or a nonprofit corporation, but you don't know how to find the funding for it, there are people there who can sit you down and talk to you about options, ideas, and how good your working plan is. Is that accurate enough, Marty?
That's good.
Good.
And we, in fact, are working on a proposal to try to get a person in our office who is specifically designated to research and help set up a handful of recycling industries right here in the interior. But we're looking into the economies of scale at this time.
Translate
which means that even though we generate quite a bit of aluminum and we could make shovels, can we do it economically? Do we have enough people who need shovels? Do we generate enough aluminum to make it economical to have an aluminum smelting and processing plant here?
Which is why you want an economic development center, to find out if it's economic to develop your project. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Did you have another thought? I'm worried about this second question that's hanging in the air.
Kathy's still there, right?
Are you still with us?
Yeah, I'm still here.
We each recognize different voices. This is a small town.
I had a conversation with Bonnie Williams after the borough assembly turned down the funding for the Good Sense Recycling Group, and her point was, if glass is not economical for a small business to pick up, let's get a business going. Let's increase the value of our recycled glass. Let's make something out of it that makes it worth it for some small business to pick it up. If we're going to put $22,000 into something, let's put it into the research or into subsidizing a small business and get them off the ground. And that makes some good sense. What we agreed on in the meantime was that it does not make much sense to just send the glass to the landfill in the meantime, that we need to fill this transition period. The other thing that we're doing at the Economic Development Center is
It went away.
It went away.
It happens to
me
a lot.
It'll come back.
Kathy, give us your second question while Marty remembers the bird.
Okay. Thanks. Well, actually, Marty kind of started to touch upon it with talking about Bonnie Williams and the ordinance. And my second question is, we talk a lot about what it's going to take to recycle in this town. And I'll look at the borough. There's a lot of people in the borough that are really excited. When I talk about the borough, I'm talking about the political entity with the walls around it. That there's a lot of people that are really excited about recycling and put their time into recycling. However, those people are not there right now funded to do recycling work. And then there's good sense, and they need money for a driver. And they are, they've got to continue to write grants to try to find money for this driver. And I guess my question is, what kind of staffing requirements or what kind of money are we looking at or what kind of network are we looking at to really get recycling kicking in this town? Because we're talking about it and it's moving, and I'm glad that it's moving slowly, because if it all of a sudden just popped up, it would probably die. It would just grow too fast for it to sustain itself. But what is it going to take in Fairbanks to get recycling going in a real healthy and consistent way?
Deborah Coons, let's start with you. When you see the Good Sense Working Group growing, where do you see it growing first, and what are the increments after that? What's your best thought about how to sensibly?
Well, it starts with the individual first, definitely. Some people say it's such a hassle to recycle. Well, if you turn that around and look at it as just another way of dealing with things, and we're basically such a spoiled society anyway, and we're such a disposable society. So if we can just re-educate ourselves and look at things in a different way to say, okay, I can make receptacles in my home that are separated so that I can put my glass here and I can put my paper here and on and on and on. I think so. It definitely does start with the individual, and then it becomes a pyramid type of thing. One person talks to another, and then it builds onto a company and organization and on and on.
Mm-hmm. Thoughts about that too, Marty?
Just one other thought, that is that we have to make a choice. Either we help provide this service in the community, or we pay for somebody to do it for us. When Good Sense started, we thought, okay, if the borough's not going to provide a recycling service, if the dumpsters are actually going to close, we, the citizens, can do it for ourselves. And what Deborah is saying is, either you sort your garbage at home and you contribute that, or you're going to pay taxes for somebody else to sort your garbage for you.
Mm-hmm.
And in that sense, you cut down on the amount of staffing and the amount of bureaucracy that you might have trying to run this operation by helping and doing it yourself.
Even better, you get it over to the recycling kiosk, which will get it over too.
That's exactly what I
mean. Next step.
Yeah.
Caller, I'm going to let you go and go on to another caller now. Dick, did you have a thought before I did this? You leaned forward.
No, I remember a TV ad years ago, you pay me now or you pay me later, and it was about the oil filter. You know, if you don't change your oil filter in your car, you're going to pay for a new engine. So
right.
It's the same thing. If you don't recycle, you pay me at the landfill.
No, I don't want to pay you. We'll do it ourselves. Say, this is just a thought. Some people may be saying out there, oh, come on, this is all very nice to listen to, but I don't care what you guys say. I don't care what you say, Deborah. It is a hassle. If people are out there who've discovered this winter easier ways than hassled ways to separate their garbage, new resources, give us a call at 474-5044. What I did was I took the garbage cans that usually lie under the gutter outlets around my house. They don't need to in the wintertime. I took them, I put them right next to the back door, and I had one for aluminum and one for plastic and one for cardboard, and I had one for something else, and I never figured it out, so I put overflow in there. So that was my idea. Somebody one-up me. Call in and give us your best ideas. Okay, now, caller, you've waited a very long time. Thank you. Join us, please.
Hi, Susan. This is Ralph Matthews.
Hi, Ralph.
I'd like to speak a bit on the non-profitability issue. I put together that manufacturing plant in the 70s here to recycle the paper, and that was a profitable venture, at least while there was a building boom going on and the cellulose insulation was in demand. The other day I was disposing of one of these little jet pack mail order soft pack
mm-hmm.
kind of packages, and I was tearing it apart to burn it, and here I find cellulose insulation in here. So I ran a little fire test on it, and it burned readily, so I realized that there was almost no cost in the manufacture of that, and the material that went into it would not have to meet the requirements that the cellulose insulation has to meet in terms of low starch content, et cetera. And it led me to wonder about the possibility of very small industries. I know that in one of the mental health workshops here, for instance, those people were, they are a labor market that cannot compete, and yet they were making rags out of cutting up clothes and taking buttons off and so on. And I'm wondering about the usefulness of a cooperative kind of ventures, because what we need is to recycle the material here. We're a long way away. All this stuff gets imported in here, represents a great deal of energy that has gone into manufacturing it, particularly in the use of, or instance of paper. And then, of course, why we take it to the landfill. Now, just as a for instance, what about a small foundry here that can produce cast iron pieces? Right now, if you break the leg on a stove that you've got, you're going to send that whole business someplace to have somebody recast a cast iron part for you. Well, the cast iron is obviously available, and it's not something that couldn't be done. The aluminum, I question because of the amount of power necessary to do that, but maybe I'm wrong about that.
Dick, responding to your suggestions.
Yes, Ralph, I wholeheartedly agree with you, and as you've heard probably if you've been listening for a few minutes, that I see this as the ultimate solution here in Fairbanks, particularly in light of the cost of landfills and the RCRA imposition of new regulations, and particularly what they're going to do to us in those people in the sky up there in Washington that write regulation. So it's not a question of whether or not we do this, it's a question that we must do it. And I use that very strongly, and I support what you're saying. I think probably technology is rapidly evolving to the point where recycling, whether it's using cast iron, aluminum, paper, whatever we're doing, I see changes almost every day now. I pick up a magazine. I just picked up one a new magazine that came out the other day. It was entitled Garbage. That was the title of the magazine. I'd never seen it before. Brand new magazine. And I probably see a magazine like that at least now once a week. And recycling news. There's just everything that's coming on, and people are starting to be aware that all of a sudden this resource that we've been throwing in landfills for all these years, that 200 tons a day that we put out there on Sendere Road, we're throwing away a lot of money. And we just need to create the public and private partnership here, or the government, if its role, should open the door to the private entrepreneurial person to do this. In other words, we make this resource available to the people that would create cellulose or whatever they might create.
So in many ways, a poor town has been sitting around on a lot of money, on
that's
wealth.
Right. That's right. It's don't need. It's about 50 acres, and it's about 50 feet high right now.
Ralph, thank you for your suggestions. I'm going to let you go. Is that all right?
That's fine.
All right. Have a good Sunday. Go to 6. You're listening to Sunday at Noon. We've got about 12 minutes left. Let's try and get as many callers in as possible because the phone rings as soon as I hang it up. You're next.
Yes, my name is Paul Banyas, and I wanted to try and dispel a myth that seems to exist about incineration that people don't seem to be aware of. And that is that when you burn something, you essentially get rid of it, that it disappears and is just magically gone except for the ash. Most educated people know that one of the basic laws of nature is that matter can neither be created nor destroyed, as you can only change its form. So essentially, when you incinerate something, you only you're just polluting the air with particulate matter and toxic chemicals and heat, and essentially just passing the buck onto your neighbors that are forced to breathe that air.
Thank you, sir. Comments back.
I wouldn't disagree with you, I certainly know that people that operate incinerators now are also required to recycle 25% of that product coming into the incinerator. So if we have and build an incinerator here in Fairbanks, we'd still be stuck with the 25%. So that won't go away. That's part of the rules already for incinerators. As far as the products, the byproducts of incinerators, yes, there's problems. One of the major ones that we know about, of course, is dioxin. And that's some of the other products, though, that are out there. We yet don't know the health hazards of some of them, and they are a problem. I agree.
Marty Peel.
Paul's point is well taken, that people who are incinerating in the lower 48 and elsewhere are running into more and more problems with the regulations and with the side effects of what they're doing. They're starting to know what's coming out of the smokestack and see the damage that some of those toxins cause. It is true that when you burn something at a hotter temperature, incinerating rather than burning it in a burn barrel in your backyard, for instance, that you can break down some of the toxic chemicals into components that are no longer toxic. But that is not true for all of them.
Okay. I'm going to let you go, caller. Thanks for your comments.
Thank you. I really support what you're doing out there.
Say thank you, folks.
We knew that.
There you go.
Thanks, Paul.
Okay, next caller, you're on the line. We've got about 10 minutes of Sunday at noon.
Yes, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Pleasure.
I was sitting here listening to you, and something hit me like a bolt of light. I without wanting to to take away from the credibility of what you're doing, again, I support the idea that there needs to be recycling, but I think it is incorrect to place all of the burden on the consumer. A lot of what's inherently systematically wrong with recycling is that you shouldn't have to do it in the first place, that in fact these non-recyclable materials are made available through the consumer train. And really what struck me like a light is that if ever there was an appropriate justification for a sales tax, it would be to tax non-recyclability. Mm-hmm. That in fact you close the loop if you don't allow things to come in here without a tax penalty that cannot be recycled locally. Mm-hmm. And I just wondered if anybody has ever presented that to a rather uncooperative borough assembly. That in fact if you use the sales tax initiative to tax those things which are not recyclable, or to incorporate up front in the purchase of an item its recycling or disposal costs, then you close the loop and there's no escape from actually forcing recycling, making it economic, or making the product not economic to consume in the first place. Let you go and hang up.
Thanks. You struck a chord, so I'm going to go around the room here. Deborah Coons, your comments?
Yeah, I was just thinking, I just heard recently that Portland, Oregon has what they call Recycle Cup that is going around and actually giving violations or citations to certain companies that are not that are using styrofoam, because they basically have outlawed that in Portland. So that's the same idea.
It's starting. Comments, Dick?
I think industry is starting to recognize this. One of the more major recognitions that we're seeing coming to the front, and with a lot of advertising, I might say, is McDonald's in the Northeast have started a major plan to take care of their problem. And I can't tell you the economics of what they're doing, but they're starting to address the problem that they've created. And industry is becoming more aware of what the public perception of what they're doing to us. And it's not all of a sudden a one-way street. And Procter & Gamble, I think, is one of the major companies that I see that's doing good work in this area. And they're reducing their product packaging volume by a tremendous amount. And I applaud them for that effort. It's a start. Mm-hmm. It's really a start.
Are there ways that groups can, perhaps groups like the Good Sense Working Group, can pressure retail and wholesale outlets to pressure the Procter & Gambles of this world to reduce the amount of packaging that they send out? Can there be a chain of pressure there, beginning in a town as small as Fairbanks or Delta or Nenana, to try and do that?
I'd like to say just one thing real quick, and then Marty can go on. Number one, it starts with the individual. If the individual was to actually boycott the particular product, well, then that's a chain reaction, and it'll continue on up. It can start with the individual once again, and then start with the different organizations. Go ahead,
Marty.
The other thing, you used the word pressure, and one of the ways I try to think of it is to think of it as interest. If you show an interest in purchasing recycled paper at Kinko's or at Unisource, then even if you can't get it, you can call and say, I would order it if I could. That's more that they know that they will have a market for it when it comes. If you mention when you're in McDonald's that you don't want it, your hamburger put into a styrofoam thing, you'd rather just carry it in a napkin, it registers your commitment to doing without it. It starts with the individual. The businesses can make a big dent because people like McDonald's and Foodland and Supervalue cannot provide. By stimulating an interest in recycling your own paper bag, you can hit a lot of people. The other thing, going back to the tax idea, one thing that we've talked about in the Economic Development Center is whether or not we could even ever work toward putting a tax on hazardous materials that come into the borough that would be refunded to you if you brought the container filled or empty back to the landfill, so that we would know that it was being properly disposed of.
Great. Thanks. We've got 5 minutes left, 3 callers on the line. Thanks a lot, folks. It's been a great show. You're on the air. Would you like to comment to us?
I sure would.
Thanks.
Hi, my name is Fred Freer.
Hi, Fred.
I have a comment on the recycling of bottles and material. In the fact that we're one of the largest, I do believe, still per capita alcohol establishments in the state, with all the amount of bottles that we go through, and I work in a hotel and a bar situation, could there not be placed on the bottles, like the state redemption values, like for example, like in California, there's a 10-cent value on each bottle. And since I assume that the Pepsi Cola, the Coca-Cola, all the bottling corporations ship their bottles up here by freight, by some sort of freight, whether it be truck or train, why not have them ship it back out in a whole shipload and get the finances for that?
And bear the price?
Right.
Yeah. Dick Jackson, your response, please.
The so-called bottle bills are multiplying. There are more of them than there were. And, of course, probably your listener is aware that that's been tried here in Alaska, and there's a very strong lobby there, so I say no more.
As Marty might say, use positive influence on the lobby. I'm going to go to another caller, but thanks for your comment. Marty? You had a thought?
Oh, just a thought. Yeah, that the recycling bill didn't pass, the bottle bill didn't pass in Alaska this year. The feeling was that the recycling businesses that are set up now would be hurt by the passage of that bottle bill, and they were among the lobbyists that opposed passage of that bill.
Interesting.
It would take the aluminum away from them, but more importantly, I think it would require them to sort bottles by distributor and to keep the cans from being crushed. And in a place where shipping is such a hassle for us, and when our volumes are not big enough to warrant separate shipping of separate containers, it makes more sense currently to proceed the way we're going now. There could be more, we could subsidize the value of those bottles so that they would get more money for handling them. But sorting according to traditional bottle bills is probably not the way to go.
Okay, I invite callers not to call anymore. We've got about 2 minutes left and 3 calls to go. So hold off. Thanks for your support of this show. Looks like we might even do it again. Caller, you're on the line.
Hello, this is Clint Elston. Hello, Marty and Dick.
Hi, Clint.
I wanted to come back to a little thing that I saw out in Minnesota when I went out this winter, and it was what I think the ultimate recycling of solid and human waste, in that we've provided the borough with a video of a company called Recomp. And in St. Cloud, Minnesota, the community of 75,000 people, they are bringing all of the organic waste to this facility, which is on a 3-acre site, and the material is dumped on the ground and separated at the location, and then the organics go into a long tube, 165 feet long, 20 feet in diameter, and in 72 hours the material comes out of this as soil. Now, the community of Fairbanks also has a sludge problem, and this sludge can be introduced into this trauma, if you want to call it also. So this community, with this kind of technology, which is being utilized in a larger community than ours, is operating quite effectively. And I was kind of wondering if this technology had gone any further in the borough. So I guess my question to Dick and Marty is if the video has gone very far, or if anybody is aware of it, or if anybody has gotten into seeing if we could direct this technology and satisfy two of our recycling problems that are in our community right now.
Thanks for your question.
We certainly have a video, and we've shown it to a public policy group, more recently the Pollution Control Commission. They were very interested in it. Whether or not we go forward now, of course, is up to the grants people, but it's on the burner. I'm not sure if it's the front one, but it's out there.
Clint, okay. It would be fun to work with you on that proposal.
Quick to the next call. Real quick question or comment?
Yes. Could the various newspapers in Alaska form their own consortium like Alyeska to build a plant to recycle newsprint for themselves?
Question mark. Dick?
I think Ketchikan is looking at that possibility of accumulating newspapers in Ketchikan with a de-inking plant there, whether or not it's going to be successful, but very strong movement in Ketchikan.
Next question. You're on the air.
Yes, I guess it was partially answered. I was curious of what we could do for newsprint and also like steel cans, you know, like you get tomatoes, you know.
Pet food,
right, that kind of thing.
We have a fellow that's interested in a detinning plant in Fairbanks. I don't know if he'll be successful, but so we're looking at all those possibilities.
Keep your eyes peeled.
Yes.
And I understand just before we leave that Ralph Bartlett and the pellet-making plant are taking newspapers now, yes? Okay.
Yes,
maybe I should
give
that phone number.
And can we use the last few minutes to fill people with information they might want to write down? Start with Ralph.
Okay, Ralph operation. Bartlett. His phone number is 452-1517.
Curious about the Good Sense Working Group, one should
call 455-6024.
One has a truck and would like to pick up from the recycling centers, one should
Call the same number, 455-6024, and we'll set it all up for him.
Good. The Economic Development Center office is on the fourth floor of the Fifth Avenue Center, is that right?
That's right. And you can call 456-7706.
Okay. And again, those people will help you pull together ideas for finances or a working plan if your working plan is not quite up to snuff. So don't be too worried if your project's not perfect yet. I think that's what they do there. Dick Jackson.
Your office is a good source of information on how to recycle and recycling education.
Yes, 452-4760, and we're certainly willing to talk to people. We just did a hazardous material day, and we were overwhelmed by what people brought us.
Good.
Overwhelmed.
And tomorrow you folks are baling cardboard in an experimental plan to see if we can...
Experimental cardboard compacting thing tomorrow. Going to try that and see if that works.
Good. Got nothing to do? Go right out to the landfill and watch that cardboard compact. Ladies and gentlemen in the listening audience, I want to thank you for making this a very interesting and enlivened program. Thank you for your calls. Thanks for your attention. As always, thank you for listening. More personal thanks to Deborah Coons from the Good Sense Working Group for coming by and giving us her sense and wisdom. Same for Marty Peel from the Economic Development Center. And as always, Dick Jackson. I'm Susan McInnes. It's been a pleasure for this hour. See you next week.